You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To join us, dial 864-977-TALK. That's 864-977-8255. And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
Surprise! Dr. Bean's gone. He had to leave. He's going to be out for the rest of the week, so outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid. Good morning. It is so good to be back. I took an impromptu trip last week, so I was gone all last week visiting my sister in Pennsylvania who moved, and I took my other sister up, so we had a great time, but it is fantastic to be back, and I have so much to talk about. I think we still have people who are calling in wanting to talk about what we closed off the last hour. Is that correct? Okay, so we're going to take callers. And I guess there's a correction to the record, which is that apparently it was the grandparents who had kind of set up. And the article that Tony and I were going off, they did not have the latest update, which appears to be that there was the grandparents had kind of set the daughter up to their granddaughter to do this. And the grandparents are the guardians of the young child. I'm not sure on that. That's kind of what we've had a lot of people calling in and saying. So, You can, and the little girl went to the principal and said, hey, you know, this wasn't me. I was told to do this kind of thing. But either way, the whole motive behind all of this, as Dr. Beam correctly said at the end of the hour, is to undermine our president. You know, they're actually getting more than a twofer, because they're undermining the president because he's associated with Mike Pence, who's married to Karen Pence, who works at this school. It's kind of like, okay, we've got all this. There's a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. So that's where we're at, which is where we're at with the whistleblower stuff with Ukraine, which is where we're at with so many aspects of all of this. They're just trying to take down Donald Trump in any way that they can. And because he picked Mike Pence, whose wife is now a horrible racist and a bigot. So, you know, of course, that's what they originally said. She's a bigot because she works at this Christian school, which has policies against homosexual marriage and transgender, et cetera. So now they're trying to pin her as a racist because she works at this school. None of this is true. It's just patently false. The whole thing was made up. There was a few people who called in and said, why aren't we pushing back? Well, that's exactly what Tony and I were trying to do, is push back against this. It's not even a false narrative. It's just a flat out lie that happened and that was contrived, and people wanting attention and then wanting to destroy other people's lives, etc. So it's just disgusting. So,
well, once you've cleared that up now, they've all let it go. So,
yeah, thankfully.
They're all gone.
Our phones were just going crazy. So, but anyway, I want to bring up, my email is signed out. So that means we have an event coming up that I want to talk about. I'll do it in the next segment though, because, my email is logged out right now. So I got to log all back in and get all that information up. But it's, the Christian Adoption Services here in South Carolina. They have an event coming up and I want to give you guys a little bit of information. So stay tuned for that. But the other thing that I want to talk about is kind of happening, and that's the new, Tony and I talk a lot about the transgender, trans athletes, the dilemma that is facing the Olympics and our sports world because of the influx of athletes who identify as transgender. And of course, this has been a big issue with the Olympics coming up. People have been trying to decide how this is going to happen. And there's kind of two aspects of this that I want to talk about, because there's a story that Dr. Beam and I have discussed prior to now that I want to bring back up and as a part of this. But the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, will not implement new, stricter guidelines for the participation of transgender athletes in time for the 2020 Tokyo Games, because a panel of scientists advising the IOC is struggling to agree on a balance between biology and fairness. So in July, researchers from New Zealand released a paper concluding that the IOC's current guidelines pose an intolerable unfairness to actual women competing against gender-confused men, who retain male advantages such as superior joint articulation, stroke volume, and maximal oxygen uptake despite hormone therapy. And it's been reported that the scientists had been expected to recommend that the IOC reduce the acceptable testosterone levels for trans women athletes by half, which supporters said would allow them to compete how they identify while significantly mitigating their physical advantages. Yet, the recommendations they have apparently stalled for several reasons. Some cited research showing that testosterone suppression still wouldn't erase substantial physical advantages, while others appear to more ideological concerns. And sources say that agreement is, quote, far more difficult than expected because this is such a tricky political and emotive issues. That right there. When did sports become political? Sports is essentially biology. Who's biologically fastest? Who's biologically the quickest? Who can biologically jump higher? I mean, it's all about our biology. And a lot of it is, yep, there's the aspect of training and discipline and practice, etc., that kind of support biology. I mean, you can never be an Olympic athlete just on biology alone. I mean, you are going to have to implement discipline and practice, et cetera. But the reality is it doesn't matter how hard you practice. If you can't jump high, you're never going to be able to jump high. I mean, it doesn't, in its basest form, you've got, sports and athletics is about biology. It's not about politics. And we've made the Olympics, we've made baseball and track and football. I mean, all of these, it's all political. Everything is political now. And when they come out and they're saying, you know, it's a tricky issue because it's political, it's a tricky political issue. We're totally doing something wrong here. Okay? It is, this is not where we should be at all. I mean, sports should just be whoever runs fastest and has disciplined themselves to be able to run fastest longest. That's it. Whoever is the best shot at basketball and has disciplined themselves to be able to hit 10 out of 10 of their free throws. That's what it is. I mean, you know, there's aspects of both this discipline and practice in addition to basic biology. And now we're saying, no, we're going to mess with the biology aspect of this because it's so political now. We've made it so political that basic biology doesn't matter. And when that's the whole basis for sports, it really is. And of course, when you're talking about sports and you're talking about the basic, you know, bottom line of sports, which is the biology of all of it, your raw athleticism, you can't deny how being a male or being a female impacts your performance as an athlete. It's why we have male sports and female sports, because they said there's a difference and women deserve to have an opportunity to compete against other women and to win. They should deserve an opportunity to win. Because if you put, you know, back in the day, they didn't have women's sports. They only had male sports. And they said, well, women could never win against men because we're biologically different. And so they said, you know what? You're right. Women deserve to have their own area of sports where they can compete against one another and become the best of their gender. Men become the best of their gender. Women become the best of their gender. It's all fair. Well, now the progressives say, no. We got to let transgender. Well, they're booting women out of their sport. We're going back in time. We're so progressive, we're regressive. Like, that's what we're doing. And the other part of this that Tony and I, well, before I bring that up, we'll take Beverly. Beverly, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks.
You weren't here last week. I don't remember what we were talking about, but I called Tony and told him I was going to write a book called Pick a Lane. But yeah, this is a prime example of pick a lane, and what happens when you veer away from God's word and God's plan, and the left gets so confused. On the one hand, they want to say women should be empowered and women should do this and women should have their own sports and be recognized. But now they've muddied the waters because they're saying, but on the other hand, you know, we've got to let these transgendered people compete however they want to compete because we've got to be open-minded and fair and whatever. And I'll again go back to the biology argument on pick a lane. Either men are men and women are women or they're not. And if you believe that biology or don't believe that biology, then you can't believe the other biology. This is simple fact is when you muddy God's plan, when you veer away from right and wrong, this is the confusion that ensues. And the Bible plainly says God is a God of order, mm-hmm. not confusion. And so if people don't understand how we got there, there's your answer.
Mm-hmm. Beverly, you make a great point, which is that's very true. God is a God of order and not chaos. And the further we have gotten away from what God has put forth for us, what he wanted for us in Scripture, the more chaotic we have become. And you just have to look around with this, the transgender, the hormone blockers, that Lupron that Tony and I were talking about in the last hour. All you have to do is look at that. And realize that, man, crazy times. And why? Because we've gotten further and further and further away from God's natural order. The other part of this story, and I know we've got to go to a break, so I'll hit this quick, is the Caster Semenya. And this is a woman who was born with biologically more testosterone than the average woman. They are wanting her to take hormone blockers so that she would be on a level equal to other women, have the amount of testosterone, etc., and hormones that other women have. And I think that that's balderdash. And here's why. Because there are, you know, 20 years from now, if we find out that people from Uganda are born with a gene that makes them faster, are we going to say, well, you have to take a blocker for that? Or you have to do something to make things fair? No, that's the way they were born. Let them run. And to this woman, I would say, yeah, she's biologically, she's a woman. This is the way God made her. There are some people, because of their ethnicity, they can jump higher. They can run faster, et cetera, et cetera. There's just the way that their biology works. And it's just the way that God has gifted them. And I don't think that I do not think that this woman should be forced to take hormone blockers that she's done in the past, and it has horribly messed up her reproductive system and her a lot of the natural aspects of her body, and have caused her a lot of pain, actual physical pain. And she should not be forced to take that because she wants to compete. Because this is the body that God gave her. And that's the whole point of the discussion here. Compete in the body that God gave you. If you're a man, you compete as a man. If you're a woman, you compete as a woman. And if you are a woman who is given an aspect of your biology that makes you better at a certain sport, then gosh darn it, go for it. That's an incredible advantage that you have. And I think that as we advance with our technology and our medicine, we're probably going to find more and more of these things about us. You know, it's like the horse secretariat. When he died, they found out that his heart was 1.5 times the size, like half the times larger than the average racehorse. Well, should he be stripped of his award? Should he be stripped of the fact that he's one of the most incredible racehorses to ever live? No. That was a biological advantage that he had. Probably not going to have another racehorse that could compete against that and compete against his times. And Caster Semenya may not either, because she has an incredible biological advantage. And I say, let him run with it. Let him go. That's a gift that you've been given, essentially. And they should not, it's not fair if we're talking about fairness. You know, that's what all this is about, is fairness. Everybody wants equal outcome, not equal opportunity. Fairness is about equal opportunity, which is what we have. All right, enough on this. We'll take a break. We're way over. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. Tony's out for the week, so you just got Hannah. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
And here's the host of Christian Worldview. It's Hannah Miller.
Good morning, everybody. Well, I wanted to talk about this event that's coming up. This is a Christian Adoption Services. They have their annual banquet, and this is going to be next week. This is October 15th, which is Tuesday. So Tuesday, October 15th. Let's see, what's today? The first. So it's not next week, but the week after. So 2 weeks from today. It's at 6:30 in the evening. It's going to be at Boiling Springs First Baptist Church. Dustin and I went last year, and it's a wonderful event. And if you would like to support a Christian organization and adoption, they've been in North Carolina for a while. They have recently moved and opened up business in South Carolina. And so that's why Dustin and I, for the first time, were there last year. And they're going to have their banquet again this year. And it's going to be, we're really looking forward to it. I heard that they're going to be bringing in a couple who have adopted, and they're going to be having a mom who gave her child up for adoption that's going to be there. The whole everybody involved in this one particular adoption, the mom, the biological mom, the adoptive parents, everybody, they're going to be there, and they're going to share their story of working with Christian Adoption Services and what that was like. And it's going to be very beautiful. It's going to be a beautiful evening. So I encourage you that if you're interested in this, that to go to this event. Again, it's at Boiling Springs First Baptist Church, and it's going to be October 15th at 6:30 in the evening. And you can register on the events page at christianadopt.org. So it's christianadopt.org, and registration is open through the 8th, so a week. You have a week to kind of get on and check out and look at their information. It's going to be a lovely evening, and we're really looking forward. I'm going to be there. My husband's going to be there. So we're very much looking forward to that. And but speaking about adoption, this was a story that Tony and I have talked about before, okay? And this is out of Michigan, and this is where Michigan had basically said that they were trying to force foster agencies that fostered. So not exactly adoption, but a lot of these agencies that do foster care and help and assist with foster care, also you adopt through. And they had, the state of Michigan was essentially saying, we're going to close you down because if you're a religious organization, such as a Catholic adoption agency called St. Vincent Catholic Charities. And they say, we're going to close you down because you're not willing to work with same-sex couples because you're bigots and that's, you know, hate, etc. And the reason that this kind of came up for me was because Bethany Christian Services is based out of Michigan. Bethany Christian Services decided to go along with this. They're really one of the biggest organizations in the United States regarding adoption, etc. They've been on the scene for a while. They have a lot of resources, and they caved. And they said, you know what? Our concern is the child and the health of the child and getting the child into a home, any home, even if it's a same-sex couple, in a foster care situation. And look, I understand our situation here in South Carolina regarding foster care is even worse than Michigan. I mean, we're in crisis here in South Carolina. But the answer is not to say we're going to solve it by opening up to same-sex. First of all, the number of same-sex couples is so minuscule. And then those even further who are willing to adopt is so minuscule. It's, you know, okay, we're going to make this huge change for two people. And every child's life matters. I get that. But as we go forward, and as time passes, we're realizing that the damage done to a lot of children who are raised in same-sex households, same-sex, you know, parent households, is not healthy. But all of that aside, it's just against what we believe as Christians. And so for Bethany, the big daddy, the one with all of the resources, to say, we're not going to push back against this. We're just going to go with the flow here. Really infuriated me. And then, God bless them, St. Vincent Catholic Charities, which handles maybe 80, if I remember correctly, about 80 foster care placements a year. Okay? That's how tiny they are. Said, you know what? This is religious discrimination. We're not going to stand for it. And they pushed back. And in a first-of-its-kind decision, a federal judge Thursday ruled that the state of Michigan likely displayed hostility toward religion when it required a Catholic adoption agency, St. Vincent Catholic Charities, to place foster children with same-sex couples. This is a major ruling for St. Vincent, which, like I said, holds a traditional biblical belief about marriage being between one man and one woman. Although a 2015 law had protected religious adoption agencies, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel labeled it indefensible during her campaign. Nessel, a Democrat, also called supporters of the law hate mongers and said the law's purpose was discriminatory animus. She was elected in 2018. Nessel refused to defend the law and this year announced a settlement requiring all adoption agencies, including religious ones, to work with same-sex couples if the agencies are to have foster care contracts with the state. So that was her. She basically blackmailed them and she said, look, if you want to work with us, with the state, and you want to get any kind of benefits, because that's the bottom line. This was the bottom line for me with Bethany Christian Services, was that it's about money. They said, we want to continue to get our money from the state, and so we're not going to compromise on this. Whereas they could have said, you know what? We're a big enough organization. We don't need the money from the state, and we're going to continue to do what is right biblically. And instead, they compromised on that, and they said, no, we need the money more. And I get it. You need money to operate. But more importantly, they had the money to push back against this, and they left it to the little guys. I brought up the story of Jack Phillips. This should have never been left to the baker, Jack Phillips, to have to push back against this tiny, you know, with his little tiny business in Colorado. Where are the big organizations? And God bless Chick-fil-A, who continues to push back against this kind of thing. And they're a huge organization with tons of resources that is like, we will not be cowed by this and by this agenda. And they have continued to stand strong on biblical principles. Whereas Bethany, and I know I'm hating on Bethany, and they do a lot of good, but I do believe the administration with Bethany in Michigan made a poor decision regarding all of this. They should have been the ones leading the way and saying, no, we have the resources to push back against this. We can take this to the next level. We can win this. But instead, they left it to little old St. Vincent and said, you do it. And God bless St. Vincent for doing it, because it looks like they're going to win. Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty sued the state on behalf of St. Vincent, foster parents, and a former foster child who is now an adult. Federal Judge Robert J. Jonker on Thursday issued an injunction against the new rule, ruling St. Vincent likely will win the lawsuit. He was nominated by President George W. Bush. The state wants to cancel St. Vincent's contract if St. Vincent issues its religious beliefs when it comes to referring new parental applicants, Jonker wrote. That strongly suggests the state's real goal is not to promote non-discriminatory child placements, but to stamp out St. Vincent's religious belief and replace it with the state's own. He added that it likely violates the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of religious liberty. And Nessel's statements, Jonker wrote, raise a strong inference of a hostility towards a religious viewpoint. All of this supports a strong inference that St. Vincent was targeted based on its religious belief and that it was defendant Nessel who targeted it. So, he's right. And again, God bless this judge for seeing right through this and saying they have a right and these organizations have a right. But again, bring up Bethany. Shame on them for not being the ones to kind of go to the mattresses on this, because they should have been. And I'm thankful for St. Vincent and other and Jack Phillips and others who are these just small businesses, essentially, who say, no, we're going to stand for religious liberty. And for those who are, you know, against Christians, this is for everybody. You know, we don't want the state to inflict any of their religious beliefs on any organization, whether that be whether the state have a Christian belief system or an Islamic belief system or atheist. None of it. We say, no, as a business, you have the right to express your deeply held religious belief, no matter what it is, without being infringed upon by the government, by the state. Bottom line. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. We'll be back in 3 minutes. If you'd like to call in, the number from long distance is 1-888-660-9535 and locally 977-8255.
And here's the host of Christian Worldview. It's Hannah Miller.
Good morning. Well, I want to talk, we're going to switch gears and talk about some new bill. GOP lawmakers want dignified treatment of aborted fetuses, and Republicans have introduced legislation prompted by the discovery of 2,246 fetal remains in the home of former abortionist Ulrich George Klopfer. Senator Mike Braun from Indiana is sponsoring new legislation requiring abortion providers to dispose of the remains of aborted fetuses through either burial or cremation. The senator introduced the Dignity for Aborted Children Act late last week in the wake of news that more than 2,200 fetal remains had been discovered inside the Illinois home of diseased abortionist Ulrich George Klopfer. And this story is obviously, it's written today, but I think it was more than last week. Maybe it meant like week before last, but anyway, because I think it was two weeks ago that this story kind of broke. Anyway, the attorneys general in Illinois and Indiana, the latter of which was the primary site of Klopfer's work, where he performed tens of thousands of abortions over several decades, have opened an investigation into how and why the medically preserved remains of aborted fetuses ended up stored in his home. There's two parts of this that I want to talk, two parts of this bill. And the first part is what I've just mentioned, which is, you know, the disposal, saying that they have to do, they have to treat the remains with dignity. And they actually, part of the bill is that it would require the woman to sign off. She can either take the remains with her or sign off on the facility taking the remains and dealing with it. And I get why they're pushing this from this perspective. I get why there's a lot of pro-lifers and pro-life organizations, and pretty much every large pro-life organization supports this. And I support it too, because it's a human life. It deserves dignity and it deserves a proper burial. Why is this what we're talking about? Why? Today, when everybody is staring at the fact that there were 2,246 bodies, babies, found in someone's home, are we concerning ourselves with the disposal? The reality of abortion and the fact that it's the taking of an innocent life is staring the American people right in the eyeball. And we're going to concern ourselves with it. Why? It's important. But we should be using this situation right here to shut down the entire abortion industry for the United States of America. And instead, we're going to argue for, and God bless them. I respect so many of the men and women, the Republican senators who are on board for this, because they're right. I mean, this is a good thing, but it's another one of those, we're just going to chip away at the abortion. And the purpose is because they believe it, and it does. It humanizes these babies, and it helps bring to light the fact that these are human beings. So if we're going to pass this kind of legislation, if we're going to do this, if we're going to say, yeah, you know what, this baby deserves a proper burial, It humanizes them, and it helps to reveal to the public. Look, they already know. If they can't hear the fact that there's over 2,000 babies' bodies found in somebody's garage and not be bothered by it, well, I'm sorry. But saying, well, okay, you murdered somebody, but you at least dispose of the body properly, would you? Do this that favor? I mean, I really don't want to attack these men and women, but let's just as pro-lifers, why are we here? Why are we taking this opportunity and squandering it on this kind of legislation? Because that's what we're doing. We are wasting this horrific exposure of the abortion industry to reveal to the American people what this is all about. There are literally bodies in the street right now. Baby bodies in the street for people to see. And we're just saying, well, you know what? Yeah, just make sure you dispose of them properly. I mean, and I know that's not the way that they're saying it. I know that they're concerned and they want to stop abortion because that's what all of these men and women have said. And that this isn't the bottom line for them. But I just can't help but think we could have done better. We could have done better legislatively than this. Now, there is a second aspect to this bill. And that is that, well, actually, we have to take a break. We'll go to a break. And when we come back, I'll talk about this second aspect that is important. And maybe they're trying to slide this one in there. I don't know. We'll talk about it some more. The number's 1-888-660-9535. And if you're local, 977-8255. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah.
And here's the host of Christian Worldview. It's Hannah Miller.
Good morning. Well, we're talking about the Dignity for Aborted Children Act. And I'm going to add one more thing to all this to kind of sum it up, what I just talked about. And then we're going to talk about the second aspect of this bill. And it's that, you know, this is a part of incrementalism in the pro-life debate. And this is, but the purpose of saying that they have to dispose of the remains as you would any other, as you would the remains of adult humans, is an effort to kind of awaken the consciousness of Americans to the reality that of human life in the womb. Okay. We're way past that point is my bottom line. Everybody knows there's human life in the womb. There's very, very few people. I mean that they're still trying to argue that, but the average person, because of science, I think genuinely knows that there's human life. So that's why I think that this is kind of a wasted opportunity here, because I think we're past this point of trying to awaken the consciousness of the American people to realize that there's human life in the womb. Let me say this loud and clear. Pro-abortionists do not care that it's human life. They don't. They know it's human life. They don't care that it's human life. And the people in the middle that are kind of ignorant on it, I think because of what's happened in the last 3 to 4 years, especially with the Center for Medical Progress, the videos that have come out, multiple, you know, we've had Gosnell and other abortionists and abortion facilities that the horrors that have happened there kind of come out. People are aware now. It's still not something that they're willing to let go. And so that's why I think that this was kind of a wasted opportunity, that because people know at this point that this is a human life in the womb. And I think that we've kind of moved on from that argument, from that discussion. And now it's just about, really, it's just praying for revival, because we have to realize that we can't just arbitrarily take human life. I mean, that's just where, you know, we know that it's human life. Everybody knows that it's human life now. And we have to pray for revival, that people's hearts would be broken over this, that the veil would be removed, that we would realize we can't do this. We can't just murder which seems like it's common sense, but apparently it's not. All right, the second part of this bill, though, and this is maybe what they're trying to sneak in with this, is that it contains a reporting component requiring that all abortion providers submit annual reports to the Health and Human Services Department detailing the number of abortion procedures performed, the gestational age of each unborn child at the time of the abortion, and the number of fetal remains released to patients or transferred for interment or cremation. This, you would think that reporting on abortions when it's a medical facility, when they have to report on absolutely everything, but you would think that this would already be in place, but it's not. And it's actually something that is the fact that we don't have accurate numbers on this kind of stuff, accurate reporting from abortion facilities, is very bad for pro-lifers, because one of the arguments that we make, you know, what do abortionists and people who are pro-abortion, what do they constantly run to? They run to the hard cases, and they say, well, and you have to have, I mean, they don't even discuss anymore. You know, when I was at that hearing a couple of weeks ago, every scenario that they brought up was, well, rape and incest, or the health of the mother, or a child with a disability, or life-threatening illness kind of thing. They now lump in finances, which I have said before is no holds barred, just an absolutely horrible thing to say, well, we're going to take this child's life because the mom doesn't have the standard of living that we think that she should have, or this mom says, I don't have the standard of living that I think I should have, so I'm going to take this baby's life. That your finances and your financial situation, and whether you're poor or rich or any of that, should have no impact whatsoever on your right to an abortion. And I know that people say, well, that's a crisis situation, and yes, it is, but you still can't murder somebody because you're in a crisis situation, okay? And I say that for these other situations, for these other hard cases, for rape or incest or the life of the mother, etc., that gives you no right to murder somebody. That's because that's what this is murder of an innocent human being. And so, you know, that's the argument that they bring forward. They always say, oh, well, the majority of abortions, well, they're absolutely not. Florida is one state that actually does this. They actually do good reporting. They require reporting from their abortion facilities. And if you look at reporting out of Florida, you realize that it's like 1% or less, or maybe it's 3% or less. I don't know. It's very, very, it's somewhere between 1% and 3% of abortions out of Florida are actually for any of the situations that I just said, the hard cases. Do you hear what I'm telling you? Over 90% are convenience abortions. And now, when I was at the hearing 2 weeks ago, it was, they were so insulted. The men and women around me, primarily women, were so insulted when we used the word convenience pregnancy, when we talked about finances. And all of this, you know, when you talk about immigration as well, and you say that somebody being poor in a Central American country, that if you are in Honduras and you're poor, well, the left, progressives, say that's a valid reason for wanting to come to the United States and being granted asylum here and being a refugee because you're running from, when of course the standards are because of religion and it's other things, but finances are not a part of that. They never have been. But we are so privileged as a society, so privileged as a United States of America citizens, that we see poverty as such a horrific thing that it's legitimate to murder somebody because of your poverty. That's where we're at. It's legitimate to break laws for illegal immigrants to come through our border illegally because of poverty. Look, poverty is a bad thing. And as you know, as American citizens, I believe and somebody who believes in the Constitution, et cetera, I believe in the free market. I believe in everybody having equal opportunity. I want those for every person in the world. I want every person to have the ability and the right to earn as much money and provide for their family as much as they want. But that doesn't mean that I believe you can break laws to do it. And that doesn't mean that I believe you can take an innocent baby's life because of your poverty. And it is revolting to me that I was surrounded by women in this room who genuinely believe that because somebody is poor or going to be born into a poor family, they do not have the right to life. Especially in the United States of America, where poverty here is barely even on a scale of what poverty looks like around the world. I think one of the best things that could happen to most progressives is that they actually travel to a third world country and realize what poverty actually looks like. And that, yeah, they're, you know, as someone who, I don't have all the money in the world, don't have a whole lot. My husband and I have struggled in the past, but it's financially. So I understand that it's hard, and finances are hard, and not having enough money does put you in a hard place. But let me tell you, if your husband loses his job because he falls and loses a leg, and then as a result he loses his job, and as a result of that, you lose your house. The bank forecloses on your house. That's a horrible situation. But that doesn't give you the right to go in and kill the bank owner or the bank lender. It doesn't. We say, no, yeah, that's a horrible situation. That's a horrible financial situation. But it, in circumstance. But it doesn't give you the right to take an innocent human life. And so if we're going to take the abortion argument that says finances are a legitimate reason for taking a life, then we have to apply that across the board and say, well, this is a difficult financial situation for this family that just lost their home. And that means that they could take the life of, well, maybe the boss, because he was the one that fired him. Or maybe it's the backhoe driver who hit her husband and he lost his leg on the job. Or maybe it's, you know, all of these other, we have to apply that across the board. You see what I'm saying? So anyway, back to the Dignity for Aborted Children Act. This is an important thing for us to have, because it does reveal there's a major hole in the abortion argument, the pro-abortion argument, which says that the majority of abortions are for the hard cases, are for these women whose life is on the line, etc. But we realize that no, the vast majority of abortions are birth control and finances. And as I just laid out, finances, as horrible as it is to be in some situations of poverty, is not a legitimate reason to take the life of an innocent human being. And if we're going to say that it's a legitimate reason to abort a human life in the womb, then we have to be able to look at somebody and say, well, you know what, because you robbed a store because you didn't have enough money to buy groceries and you killed the store owner, or you killed the gal at the register, that's legitimate. You are in crisis. That's not, you know, finances, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to be poor. And if you kill somebody because you're poor and you don't have money for something, that's legitimate. No, we can't do that. That argument doesn't work for the man who lost his home, for the person who can't feed their family. And it doesn't work when we're talking about abortion. That's an innocent human life. And we have to give the life in the womb the same respect and dignity and treatment, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that we give every human life. All right, thanks for listening. This has been Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. I'll be in all week. Tony's in Dallas. Thanks for staying with us. I'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Tune in.